today on Rockin' the Suburbs.
Hey, Patrick, the listeners want to know, what will be the name of the next Wingtip Sloat album?
Yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker!
That's perfect.
That's not a bad name.
Okay, Patrick, so this is day three of the interview presentation, the interview with Ricky Peterson, touring keyboardist with Fleetwood Mac, and done a lot of other work. And I want to ask you this question. Mm-hmm. At any point, did you fear that we would get kicked out of the Four Seasons?
Yes. Yes. Pretty much when I walked in, that was one time. Although they were so nice, you know, that's their job.
Yeah.
I'm like, sir, I got there a little bit early. Like, sir, would you like a table to work at and some, you know, what do you need, an outlet, bottle of water? Yeah, they took care of me. So I thought for sure I'd be out of my butt right away. But yeah, I did.
It's really nice. You walk into that hotel, it's really nice. And I have, I was driving our old minivan because my car is in the shop right now because somebody sideswiped me, and so it needs some repair work.
Yeah.
So I was driving the backup vehicle, mm-hmm. which is this old 2005 minivan with like rust spots and things like that. And I pull up to the Four Seasons. I felt like such, and it's like makes weird noises and stuff. And I just felt like such a fool. But anyway, but they took care of us.
Oh,
and they
were very nice. So nice. And yeah.
They didn't judge us.
No, they're trained to be professional in all situations. So
we interviewed Ricky Peterson there at the Four Seasons Hotel and when you are staying in Washington, D.C.
You probably can't afford it.
Yeah. Right. But if you have the means, by all means, stay there. We also hung out with him a little bit after the interview at the hotel bar.
He was so nice about that and chatted with us and told us a few things that were really funny. And that was really cool.
And he picked up the tab.
Oh, man.
He's probably got that per diem, right?
Yeah. I think I probably could cover a few drinks.
Yeah. So that was nice. So thanks very much, Ricky, for hanging out with us. It was so much fun.
He was so cool.
And in this part of the interview, we're going to talk more about some of the people he has worked with.
Yeah.
Mostly as a producer, I think, a lot of this stuff. Producer, mm-hmm. and he also played keyboards on records with some of these guys. Mm-hmm. It's a crazy list of names. I don't even want to get into this right here, but it's kind of all over the place,
it
right?
It really is, And if you were alive during the 80s, there's a couple of names that really jump out at you.
It's really interesting. So
let's do that
here real quickly before we do. Let's promote the fact that we have a live show coming up.
Live.
We're going to do a live podcast taping on Thursday, April 4th in the evening. It's going to be at a place called Spaces in Chevy Chase, Maryland. You will need tickets for this event, but the tickets are only $5. So if you go to suburbspod.com, you'll see a link there where you can purchase tickets, and we are going to interview Don Zintara. He is a producer of a lot of punk bands in DC, a lot of the famous ones you've heard of. And I'm sure he's going to have a lot of great stories to share, kind of like Ricky did in
absolutely.
Experiences, but just from a totally different sort of musical
totally
culture,
different
right?
perspective. Yeah.
Cool stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm sure it'll be great.
And Don's going to play some of his own music too. So it's going to be really a lot of fun, and we'll do some audience interaction. It'll be a good time. So go to suburbspod.com and you'll see the link there to buy the tickets for that Thursday, April 4th. All right. Let's move on now to part three of our interview with Ricky Peterson. This is Rockin' the Suburbs. I'm Jim Linehan.
And I'm Patrick Foster.
And here's Ricky.
One name that really jumped out at me when I was looking at this amazing list of artists you've worked with was Jorge Ben. You produced something with him. He's one of my favorites.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely.
How do you know Jorge Ben?
You should see his Georgie, records in his basement.
I'm into a lot of Portuguese and Brazilian music and Tropicália and all that stuff. Yeah, for sure. So you did some executive producing and some recording with him. Any memories you have of that? I'd love to hear.
Well, sure. You know what I actually did, man, is I was the executive producer on it, and that's because of the Prince thing. You know, these guys wanted me to do this, and I didn't have any managers or anything like that at that time. This is just something that came to me, and they wanted me to produce it.
Wow.
And I, of course, was on the road. And I was like, I delegated to my brother Paul, who was very, very talented. And he and I had done all this stuff, and he's watched me produce stuff throughout the years. And I really wanted to do this record. So I was on the phone every day with him, you know, and forth. So. But Paul did most of the music. I did a lot of the music,
okay,
you know, when I was there. But he ended up finishing. So we had delegated like out to, it was Kirk Johnson. Kirk Johnson was the drummer for Prince in the latest band.
Okay.
And was his side, I mean, that was who was by his side when, who found him.
Oh, wow.
Oh.
Yeah. So they were very close. But he has been there since back then. And that was mid-90s, man.
Yeah.
So he's been with them that whole time.
Wow. Man,
you know, as his best confidant and whatever. But, he, you know, I delegated most of the other songs that I couldn't do to those guys.
Okay.
So, but it was such a great record,
oh,
man.
Oh, it is, man.
Thank you. I'm glad that, I haven't heard that name in a long time.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
So
he's
cool.
He's one of my favorites. And you know.
So cool, man.
Yeah. I was one of those people that when I got sort of burnt out on rock music, my salvation became like African and Tropicália and Portuguese
absolutely,
music.
Man.
But yeah, he's a giant. That was one name that really jumped out. I was
that's
like, Brian
cool.
Wilson, man, no big deal. Jorge Ben, oh, my God.
Yeah. I'm glad you brought that up because, you know, that was one of those summers that I was gone the whole time.
Wow, that's amazing.
You know,
yeah.
And it was...
I haven't listened to that in a long time, and I have to go home.
Go back.
I need to go home and see if I do have it in my collection. I think I do, but I'm not positive.
Yeah,
but I'll have to find out. Now I definitely got to get it.
I'm going to go do the same thing, man. Absolutely.
Cool. So this will tell you the difference between me and Patrick.
Yeah.
The name that jumped out at me... was Bruce Willis.
Ah.
Oh, boy.
What was that? What happened there?
Well, there's
that?
A whole other thing.
Okay.
Well, I'll jump back and go back to where I met Robin Ford. Do you know that name?
I do not.
Robin Ford is a wonderful guitar player that actually played with Miles back in the early 80s.
Mm. Okay.
And he was one of the first guitar players besides Mike Stern and all these guys that went through that band of Miles that kept changing and changing. Well, he came and played with us and this is how I met Robin, played with Sanborn. And
okay.
He played with Sanborn and I in 91. I think it was just a year that he did. But we became very close friends. And he's played on every one of my records so far, you know, I mean, that I've done. I make sure that he's at least got a solo on it or something. I love him. So
okay.
And I just got through finishing. I did about 5 years with him just in the last, you know, 8 years or whatever, you know. Anyways, we had just a great time together. He was involved with Bruce through a guy by the name of Gary.
Okay.
But Gary was producing a thing for him, for Bruce. And it was in L.A., and I happened to be in L.A., and he said, come and do this with me. And I'm going, well, where am I going? And he said, well, you're going to come up to Bruce's house. Bruce who? Bruce Willis.
Yeah.
And I knew Bruce, actually, I have to say this, when I was in New York hanging with David, he was a bartender down at Chelsea.
Yeah, that's how he started out, right? That's wild.
And I knew him from that, and I knew him from hanging out at the China Club in New York, which is a big music club and hang back in the 80s. And I'd met him through that, and we weren't real close friends, but we were acquaintances, and we had laughed together a lot, you know? And he remembered who I was when he was doing this record, and he's a harmonica player slash singer.
Right.
And I had seen him at a place called the Catalinas on Sunset Boulevard in L.A., And Mike Finnegan was his keyboard player at the time. And I went out to see Mike, and there was Bruce. And, of course, we got together, and we talked. And then we went out a couple of times, and he said, well, you know, and this is how Gary said, well, you need to come and do this with us. And it was Robin Ford, Gary, me, and Bruce. And I can't remember who was playing bass. Anyways, and so we went up to his house on Mulholland Drive and did a bunch of recording. And I finally, I was getting, check this out, you'll love this. I was getting a Hammond organ for my mom so she could have it. Because she got rid of all her Hammonds in the basement to make room for furniture or whatever. And I'm saying, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
So she gave them away to churches. So I was going to buy her this A100, which is a beautiful spinet Hammond B3, like a B3, but it's more of a spinet, small. Mm-hmm. I ended up buying it and giving it to Bruce.
Okay. Wow.
Because he didn't have one. And I said, well, I've got one here. You want to buy this one? And he said, sure, send it. So, wow. And that's how that started. It's because he didn't have any organs, and that's what they wanted. They wanted me to come
that
and
sound,
play organ.
Yeah,
they want
definitely.
That kind of R&B sound.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
So
mm-hmm.
That's how I met Bruce. And
that's
we
wild.
Haven't kept in touch that much, but we did a little bit after that. He'd call me on the phone. It's like, oh. By the way, it's Bruce Willis on the phone.
Bruce Willis? Yeah,
Bruce
hang on.
Willis,
talk
man.
To Bruce Willis. Yeah.
And he was a total New Jersey East Coast dude, too,
I
man.
Bet.
I love him. Yeah, he's one of these guys, he's very New Jersey. I love him, man. He's very funny.
I would bet, I remember that period where he was trying to establish himself as a singer and putting out records, stuff like that.
Right.
I mean, did he need help? I mean, did he need guys to, sort of help him figure this out?
That was why those guys were there. They were all very talented producers and musicians, and I mean, it's like Robin was a marvelous guitar player. That's what we do. We go make people sound good.
Yeah.
And he was a pretty good harmonica player. And he sang. He didn't really, he wasn't a projected male vocalist, but he was having fun. So
it was fun.
That
it was like a bar
deal.
Band kind of feel to it, right?
That kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we had a ball, man, We were the only ones smoking cigarettes too at that time, so we'd go out and we'd kind of sneak. nobody wanted to smell it in the house or anything.
Right.
He was wearing a patch, and that was funny, man. At the time, it's a long time ago.
Another name that caught my attention here because I'm a basketball fan is Wayman Tisdale.
Yeah.
Because, absolutely.
So I lived in Indiana at the time when he played for the Pacers.
Sure.
And I remember that, and then I knew that he had establish himself as a jazz musician. I mean, he was really well regarded in that field,
man.
Before he tragically died about 10 years ago.
Yeah.
What was that like working with him? First of all, he must have just been a giant, right? I mean, just a huge guy.
He's huge.
Yeah.
Power forward.
It's like Shaq.
Yeah.
He's just huge. The cat was huge. I'll tell you exactly how I met him. We did a gig with Sanborn, and we were in California somewhere, and this is when he was first starting. And he opened for us. And of course, I totally loved what he was doing. So we got together and started talking away.
Were you skeptical at all? You say like a jock can't play music like
no,
this,
because
right?
Because I didn't know that he was a jock. I didn't know who he was, and I didn't see him because we're back getting a cocktail, where the guys are,
right?
Set, they're playing before us, and we're in the back room going, and we went. Well, what the hell is that? And we're going, so we had to go out and find out, and we see this giant dude playing this tiny little piccolo bass, man. We're doing, at the time, he was playing lead bass.
Yeah.
That's what it was his thing. And, of course, we were just all jaw-dropped, and we couldn't believe how talented the kid was, man. And he was a kid, Not that we weren't that much older.
Right, right.
But he was, and we just hit it off right away. And of course, he became very big in the smooth jazz industry.
Yeah, right.
And when it was actually lucrative.
Yeah.
So I was able to get in on that and play on his records. And, they'd call, we got to have Ricky play organ on this. So
yeah.
They would send me that stuff, or I would go out and do it with them. And, was a big fun thing back in the 90s, the smooth jazz stuff, even because I met so many great players. You know, and that was all that Sanborn thing.
Yeah.
You know, it's all the rest is history.
Right. It totally is.
So it just kind of goes on. It's like dominoes, man. You start playing on everybody's stuff. And
Let me ask this real quick. Is we were kind of going back and forth with jazz and pop and rock and all of that kind of stuff. And as a working musician, you got to be able to do a lot of different styles. I mean, that's how you maintain a career, right?
Yeah. You know, a lot of people don't do that, though. You know, a lot of guys have their career. I've been fortunate to be able to do a lot of different genres. Yes. Yeah. I've been, because I like them all.
Yeah.
You know? Even, you know, playing honky tonk country, I've had to learn how to do that a little bit. Not country so much, but like Dr. John kind of stuff.
Yeah.
You know, that stuff I love, and it's hard as hell to play, you guys. I'm not lying. And that was kind of where, when I was with Bonnie, I had to go there.
Yeah. You know? Sure, I'm sure.
So, yeah. And that was such a great learning experience for me, you know, and just all, every one of the different people that I played with, man, it's always been different. I mean, John Mayer.
Yeah.
You know, that, you know, it's all been just eclectically different, but still on a pop note, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, I've never really been a bebop player. So was never my forte, because I was always doing pop music for the most part.
Yeah.
I was out making money.
Well, that's what I'm saying. That's a good thing.
There you go.
Hey, you can make money in this business. I mean, right?
I'm a lucky man. I have to tell you, you know, I've been a lot of times in the right place at the right time, you know? So, I mean, it's kind of what it takes to keep working in the business, as long as you keep your nose clean, so to speak.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Right. Yeah. Right.
So,
and what I was going to ask, though, is how different is it creatively, I guess? Because when people go to a Fleetwood Mac show, I would imagine they sort of have an expectation of how the songs are going to sound, right? Mm-hmm. There's certain, maybe you get a little bit of deviation, but probably not that much. It's got to be a lot different than when you play a jazz gig,
completely.
Right?
It's completely different. I mean, we were doing it to please the crowd. You know, I mean, really, they're going to do it like it's supposed to be done, because that's what everybody is, you know, used to. Of course, like you said, there is a deviation, because it's not all the same players, and they're not all used to playing. They're not playing everything exactly the same every night. You know, you don't want to do that, because you might as well just turn on a record player. You know?
Yeah, so exactly.
The whole point of being live is being live, you know. Is playing live and being able to improv, you know, improvisational works, you know, especially when they're soloing, you know, except for now you have to go look at where Mike Campbell is, you know, because he's, a lot of those things that Lindsay did were very strict, man.
Yeah.
They're precise,
so so it just is very precise, and if you deviate too much from that, then it's like, you know, a lot of people will go, what the heck was that, you know? But so he's been very good, very, very, very poignant in doing the right thing, and at least getting the first parts of those things, or things that are very, you know, that you would remember, and he knows what to do with it. So it's fantastic, man. He knocks it out of the park, man. I can't tell you. He's so great.
Wow.
And, you know, yeah. I mean, what's not to like?
Yeah.
All right, there you go. Jorge Ben, Bruce Willis, Wayman Tisdale. Doesn't get much more diverse than that, right?
No, it does not.
When I was in college at Indiana University in the 80s, that was the era where Wayman Tisdale played for the Pacers. And I remember there was like, he did commercials for like McDonald's, but they weren't like national ads. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like basically like the Indianapolis area McDonald's or whatever would you know, use him as their spokesman. Isn't that weird?
That is kind of cool.
And he had this line that said, tell him the Tiz sent you.
Did he really?
Yes.
The Tiz.
The Tiz. Nice. And somehow all these years later, I still remember that. So
that's
I don't
funny,
know.
Man. You get what you can.
Okay, so we have one more part to this interview. Mm-hmm. Ricky's going to talk some more about sort of like music he really likes and got into, and some other stuff. You might hear another famous name mentioned.
Yes, I think you will.
In the next part, that kind of threw me a little bit.
Yeah.
So listen to the show frequently.
Yeah, every day.
Every day.
That would be my suggestion.
Including tomorrow.
Uh-huh.
And also let us know what you think. You can call 612-440-1984. You can leave a message there, and then we'll put your voice on an upcoming show. Or you can email rock@suburbspod.com. Mm-hmm. Or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter or Instagram. All those at Suburbs Pod. Also, please support our show financially through Patreon.
Yeah.
You go to patreon.com/suburbspod, make a monthly donation, and you can get some bonus material, including, for example,
this whole uncut interview.
A whole uncut interview has already been up there for a while, since shortly after we did the interview. Mm-hmm. So when we do interviews in the future, we're also going to do that, just put up the uncut version, and you'll have early access to that if you donate at least the $5 per month level.
Yeah, which isn't much. And, you know, I'm sure you spend, like me, that on coffee, you know, a couple days a week. So definitely worth it. It's cool to kind of be a fly on the wall during that interview and just hear how it kind of went down. But also, I definitely think it speaks to the genius of ourselves, Jim, when we put these episodes together with all this lovely chatter.
That's
on each side.
That's right. There you go. All right, let's get out of here. Let's get to part four.
Cool.
It's Rock in the Suburbs. I'm Jim Linehan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
We'll talk to you guys tomorrow.
After he's been elbowed, fouled, and yelled at, how does Wayman Tisdale fire up that famous smile?
Breakfast at McDonald's.
And right now, Wayman's smile is a full 100-point grin. Because with any breakfast sandwich and drink at McDonald's, you get
free hash browns.
Free hash browns with your breakfast at McDonald's.
Tell them McTiz sent you.